the classical paradigm. The art that is often seen as the epitome of the philosophies of the Enlightenment actually owes just as much to the ideas of the classical paradigm. Art in the mid-1700s, as seen in the Rococo style, was suffering from a case of death by excess, or decadence. It was fluffy and frilly and self-serving, and some people felt that it was showing how society at the time was the same. The Enlightenment called for noble, edifying art that could repair the moral fabric of the nation. But this also meant looking for new role models in art aesthetics. Looking to Baroque and Rococo artists for a guide would only lead to more cotton candy lack of substance. Looking to Michelangelo or the Renaissance artists would not lead to purity of intention or virtuousness, since they also came from a flawed time, and the great artists of the Renaissance received their inspiration from the Greeks. Scholars began to argue that the pinnacle of Western society was the age of the Greeks, and thus the art of the 1700s should look to Homer, Plato, and the Greek artists for pure and culturally untainted inspiration. The literary works of Johann Joachim Winckelmann, Reflections of the Imitation of Greek Works in Painting and Sculpture of 1756, called to imitate what was thought as nobler, healthier, and a more fulfilling time. Winckelmann was one of the leading scholars at the time, arguing this was the right way to look at reviving morality and culture. This new kind of classicism, or neoclassicism, was more than just looking back to Grecian ideals. It was about finding ideals, purified of every imperfection, which while the Greeks also looked for what they called the ideal was a different kind of ideal, when the ancient Greeks looked to create an ideal form, they were looking to return to the ideal generic thing that was created at the beginning of the world, understanding that the first tree, animals, humans, created were the perfect and ideal specimen of each thing as considered ideal for their role by the gods. Therefore, if an ancient Greek artist found they had recreated the perfection, they could simply keep copying that as a form because there would never be a better version. In Grecian times, Polycletus' spear-bearer was considered perfectly ideal, or canon, and was therefore a rule of form that all others could follow. However, an artist couldn't just create a single perfect figure and use it in all situations. Each ideal was home to its own ideals and narrative. For example, Polycletus' figure would have been a perfect athlete, a perfect young man, but not a youth, and a perfect warrior, but the figure could never be used to relay ideas of wisdom, age, or femininity. For those ideals, a different ideal form was required. To the French in the 1700s, the idea of ideal didn't have the same connotations of being related to the divine original copy of creation. It was more closely related to our contemporary understanding of ideal, something that is perfect and unimprovable. However, the French scholars did feel that a Greek ideal would be the closest to the cultural ideal of intelligence, strong character, and civic duty. Pompeii and Herculaneum were rediscovered around 1599, while the first archaeological excavations began in 1764. Winckelmann was one of the scholars heavily influenced by this discovery, and he, as most other scholars, was sorely disappointed when he realized that the murals found at Pompeii and Herculaneum did not live up to the preconceived ideas of what Greco-Roman art must have been. At Pompeii and Herculaneum, the art varied from technically perfect to crudely rendered, with subject matter that ran from the benign to the scandalous. Much of what was found there did not reflect a society that was perfect, healthy, and untainted by the vagaries of moral decay. In reaction to this discovery, Winckelmann hypothesized a developmental model for societies that has been applied to Greek and Roman art and culture ever since. His theory was that art in Greece and Rome must have had a life cycle like that of a living creature, a birth, flourishing, prime, decay, and death arc. He explained, based on this theory, that the classical Greek period was the high point. It had a primitive kind of learning period at the start of its life that flourished and grew with a high middle point that eventually decayed and grew stagnant and self-indulgent with the Roman period that was built on the weakened ruins of the previous society. This model continues to be the canon for art history as it continues to be taught into the 21st century. Written in 1764, the History of Ancient Art put forward the idea and it has stuck to this day. It is challenging, though not impossible, to find any scholarly theories of the evolution of Greek and Roman art and culture that is not based on the model of a rudimentary beginning, perfected middle, and overindulgent end. However, this is an area that may require intense scrutiny, as contemporary scholars have realized how the art of the Greek and Romans were viewed in the 1700s is not a representation of how the Greeks and the Romans viewed their own cultural output. When Winckelmann and his associates saw the marbles of the ancient Greeks and Romans, they saw them in their weathered and unpreserved states, weathered down to their raw marble foundations. The scholars of the 1700s accepted these sculptures as pieces that would have been presented in their raw white form because they were familiar with sculptures from the Renaissance, which were revered for their pristine white marble surfaces. The sculptures of the Renaissance had also been influenced by the white Greek and Roman sculptures they had seen. The reality was that white marble sculpture was simply a myth told by the harsh realities of time. Originally, ancient Greek sculptures were painted in bright colors and presented with an aesthetic that would have made the neoclassicists, and continues to make some present-day people, quite uncomfortable. This makes it clear that the foundations of neoclassicism were built on misinformed judgments regarding ancient cultures. However, the philosophers and the scholars of 1700s France felt that the change was needed in their society, so they looked back to a culture they believed to be better than their own. This combination of looking back to the quote-unquote ideal era to find the quote-unquote ideal way of communicating more edifying ideals and noble character gave birth to what we know as neoclassicism. However, the most famous works of art of the new classical era, or neoclassical, are also shown as examples of the Enlightenment because they really are doing double duty. Yet, this doesn't mean that every painting of the Enlightenment was a neoclassicist work. Neoclassical works were only ones that showed Greco-Roman themes and stories as a way of relaying a narrative of Enlightenment values, while Enlightenment works show the values of the Enlightenment through many narratives and aesthetic means.